Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 503 for comics originally released on March 29th, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is Booster Gold, The Flintstones, number one, or the special number one, I guess. They didn't put special in the cover. It was actually billed as an annual originally, but it came out as a special, and it was special. This is one of the four $4.99 comics that came out this week. This being a five-week month, so it's kind of, sort of, but not quite a fifth-week event, if you will, where they're crossing over some DC properties and some Hanna-Barbera properties. Each of these also has a backup feature. In this case, it's the Jetsons. So we'll talk about the lead story, then we'll talk about that backup feature. I'm a fan of Booster Gold. I've been enjoying the Flintstones series, but I'll be honest, I was not sure how well these two properties would mix. And
you were correct.
I was correct. Not for the reasons I thought, actually. You know, as much as I've been liking the Flintstones series, there were aspects in this comic that, man, it just didn't work for me. And a lot of it actually was Booster Gold. I mean, he's in costume, walking around town in the 24th century as if that's just a normal thing to do. And when he's there in historic Gotham, apparently near Crime Alley, which is a big, you know, tourist thing, there's a lady whom I guess is a tour guide, because she's just spouting exposition for no reason. There should have at least been a sign of her being a tour guide or something. And then, of course, the convenient exposition on the TV across the street from there. It was a little heavy-handed. And this Booster Gold felt more like kind of the Giffen de Mateus era Justice League, kind of the Bwahaha era Booster Gold, than the more recent version we've seen right up before the New 52, maybe even a little within the New 52. Who is a much more heroic time-traveling character. Here he's a bit of a goofball. And again, perfectly viable take, but not the one I was expecting. So that was part of it. And then we get this time-travel paradox kind of a story. Usually those sorts of things work well for me, but the paradox part of the story I felt was a little kind of ham-fisted and just kind of crammed in there to give a plot for these characters to walk around in. And really, both Booster Gold and the Flintstones felt kind of crammed into what could have actually been an entertaining paradox story if it had been in, what's that title over at Universe or whatever, over at the online place that did...
Panel Syndicate.
Panel Syndicate, thank you. Blanket on the name. I mean, the overall gist of the story reminded me of that kind of a vibe.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it just wasn't executed as well here, and it felt the need to cram the Flintstones and Booster Gold in here, and neither side of the equation really kind of worked. How did this work for you?
Overall, I mean, I don't want to jump it to the backup story, but I love the backup story.
We'll get to that in a sec.
So I'm just going to go on record. I really love that backup story. This was just okay, and there were some aspects of the story that the idea that this alien was here to spread peace and love, and because he may have accidentally been killed, all-out war must ensue to avenge him. And the fact that those aliens kind of missed the point, his whole point. that I thought was clever, but it was really hidden. That it took a while for that to kind of that message to get out, and it was just a lot of silliness up until that point, and you kind of just had to wade through some stuff that was really, it was silly. It was just some silly stuff. There, of course, can be silly aspects to Flintstones, but it's all it's usually handled a little better by Mark Russell. I don't know if he was comfortable with Booster Gold as a character, or this was just an assignment and he did the best he could. Probably not something he wanted to do, maybe. And it kind of showed. Yeah, I don't think Booster comes off very well here. And
neither do the Flintstones, in so much as normally that title has a lot more social commentary and a bit more bite to it.
Yeah.
And here, yeah, you've got the message of peace provoking a religious war almost or whatever. But, I mean, they had to flat out tell us that there at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was the art doesn't crackle as well as it normally does either. Mm-hmm. It probably a different artist, I'm guessing. I don't think this is bad or anything, but not the level the Flintstones issue to issue that I've been used to. So it was a bit of a drop off for me.
Yeah, I think if you were thinking you would get kind of what's on par for the Flintstones series, you don't. If you were expecting to get kind of, you know, a Booster Gold kind of story or whatever, yeah, he's in here, but I don't feel you get what I expected, at least. So I do think there's an audience for this. It's not bad, but I don't know that it's going to hook anybody on either the Flintstones or Booster Gold. It doesn't matter, because Booster doesn't have a series. The Flintstones is ending shortly. It was a concept that kind of sort of made sense or whatever, but I'm almost wondering if they might have been better having Booster encounter the Jetsons versus the Flintstones. I thought the lead story was okay at best.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the backup story of the Jetsons is done by Palmiotti and Connor on the writing, and it's a complete reimagining of the Jetsons.
That is not canon. The origin of the robot maid is not, that is not canon.
That is correct. this backup feature really serves as a setup for the Jetsons series. It's not a bad short story, but these weren't recognizably the Jetsons to me. You know, the look of the characters didn't feel quite right, even for a reimagining, and it didn't have anything that I would... It didn't feel iconic Jetsons, even in a let's revamp it and retool it, the way Flintstones or the Scooby Apocalypse stuff has at least harkened back pretty strongly. Here you've got a family of four. The names happen to be that of the Jetsons. That's about it for the connection, other than they're in the future. So I thought they told a good story. It was a good sci-fi kind of a thing, but it didn't really sell me on the Jetsons as an ongoing series.
Well, the exact opposite for me. I love this backup. This Pierre Brito, who did the art, I think I've not seen the name before, but I think it's really great art. It's just a really, really good style that I really took to. I like Palmiotti and Connor sometimes. There was an Aftershock series they did that I really, really enjoyed. This reminded me a lot of that, tone wise and style wise. This was a lot of fun. I recognize the Jetsons on the surface, you know, and who everybody was. It of course doesn't look like the animated series that I remember from my youth, but it was really fun. Everybody's a little younger, a little hotter.
Did this George Jetson, could you hear the voice of the cartoon George Jetson and what he would be saying coming out of this character?
Not yet, because it's early.
Fair enough.
This is almost a zero issue prequel to the characters that we know. They just got Rosie. They didn't already have Rosie, who was an established character that had been around for a while.
Yeah, but
this is the first time they're seeing them, so they're younger. He hasn't gone through, you know, everything that he's gone through to become the guy that would scream out on the treadmill.
I'll give you that George is not the older man he is in the cartoon series, but I think both Judy and Elroy feel a bit older than they did in the cartoon. So, and again, it's a reimagining, and it's not a bad one. If you're looking for a sci-fi series or whatever that kind of harkens back to a more nostalgic age of sci-fi, if you will, this may be right for a lot of people.
Yeah, so if this is, has this already been solicited? A new series?
Think so.
I'm assuming this is some kind of pilot season that they're running as the backup features in these annuals. And some will take and some will not, or they might all four be the next wave of Hanna-Barbera tie-ins. I'm not sure.
I think they're all the next wave. And if we didn't get it in the latest previews, then the next one will have the solicits for these.
Yeah, this just did a good job for me then of saying, put this on your radar. This is something you should check out when it comes out. And I definitely will. This is one that, and not only that, I guess I didn't realize, back when it was solicited as an annual, I don't remember anything about this backup feature being in the solicit. Maybe it was, maybe I just missed it.
It was,
but now it makes me want to check out these others that I was way less interested in. I didn't care about any of the other crossovers. But now I think I will, just to see those backup features and just to see, to get a little sample, a little prequel of what's to come, so I can make a better decision on whether to get some of those new offerings.
So you did not get the Adam Strange Future Quest, the Green Lantern Space Ghost, or the Suicide Squad Banana Splits ones?
No. But now I want to check out the backups with Snagglepuss or whatever. I looked a couple of them up and I've already forgotten most of them.
The Adam Strange
Top Cat, I think.
Top Cat was in Adam Strange Future Quest. Rough and Ready was in Green Lantern Space Ghost, and Snagglepuss was in Suicide Squad Banana Splits.
Yeah. So I'll flip through those, and I'll probably go to the comic shop and just flip to the back and flip through that story and see if it does anything for me.
Are you reading Future Quest?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, if you were, I really recommend the Adam Strange Future Quest one. I would say it was the best of the bunch, but that's just me.
Yeah, but yeah, I didn't really care much for the Future Quest unless it got better than launch title.
I think it got better because they pulled the whole team together, and there was some early issues where I felt the pacing was a little sluggish, but I think it's really picked up lately. And this takes place after the whole series, so it takes place, or that Adam Strange Future Quest takes place after Future Quest number 12, which isn't out yet, which kind of annoys me.
Yeah, so it's actually making me want to read that Jetson, at least that first couple of the Jetsons when it gets launched. Not really the purpose, I guess, of the main thrust of this issue, but that was a little bonus for me. As far as the main story, yeah, much less enjoyment for me, pretty average. So if I gave the booster part a C, and I really like this and gave it an A, so I guess it's overall things a B.
Okay. For me, the Jetson stuff, it wasn't bad, but it didn't click with me as well as it did for you. Throughout the lead story, I was expecting the Flintstones to provide a little bit more than just a prehistoric setting, and I was expecting a different Booster Gold, frankly. And I don't really feel like I went in with preconceived notions. It didn't go the direction I thought it was. It's not bad, it just fell kind of flat for me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with a C+ overall. If I was really charitable, I could maybe give it a B-, but I'm not there. I did read the other ones, and I would recommend the Adam Strange Future Quest. I thought the Green Lantern Space Ghost lead story was pretty good. I didn't care for the Rough and Ready at all. The Top Cat thing was interesting, if a little bizarre. And the Suicide Squad Banana Splits, if you're into either of those teams, you might want to check that out, but, the Adam Strange Future Quest one was the best of the bunch for me.
By and large, for a set of $4-$5 annuals / specials, kind of a swing and a miss?
I would say so, and part of it for me is they were inconsistent on how the DC Universe and the Hanna-Barbera universes were intersecting. In this case, with Booster Gold and the Flintstones, it's just time travel. It's the same universe. With the Adam Strange stuff, they definitely go more parallel world kind of a deal, multiverse kind of a thing. With Space Ghost Green Lantern, they kind of split the difference, and you can kind of fly into that other universe magically somehow. In other words, it's not like a switching parallel dimensions kind of a mechanism, but they claim it kind of is that way. And then with the Suicide Squad Banana Splits, the characters just happen to be there. So it's as if it's one universe or whatever. And then some of the stuff they do in the backup features, trying to mix some of these characters, like Top Cat, taking Top Cat and putting him where they put him, just boggled my mind. You know, there's certain properties that I think mix better than others, and it felt like is Dan DiDio and DC's, they're taking as much ownership over the Hanna-Barbera characters as they possibly can, and trying to stake as much of a claim as they can. And if they've got stuff they can do with it and it's great, that's awesome. But the way they've tried to sort of integrate it with the DC Universe, I don't think was necessarily the right move. parallel dimensions, I'm all for that. You can do crossover, stuff like that. That's cool. But when you try to have, you know, Top Cat or, you know, anthropomorphic cartoon animals and integrate them with a more mainstream DC universe, I got to question why.
Yeah, you know, and this is one of those situations where I'd be really interested to hear what the rest of the listeners thought of these on the forum, maybe on our weekly comic spotlight thread, because if I recall back to when these were solicited, there was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of listeners who were excited about all of mm-hmm. these, probably covered all four of those, or even doubled up a couple of them. Got us all excited. We all got excited about these titles, and it seems overall like the execution wasn't quite there. From the two of us, from our two opinions. I'd love to hear exactly if some of the folks that were excited about them early on and tried them, if they got a little something out of them, maybe we missed something. I'd love to hear that. Especially if I'm thinking about checking out some of those other ones, which one should I check out? Or which ones should I check out? I'd love to hear their opinions on that.
No, same here. I'd love to hear what worked for them and why, and what didn't and why.
Yeah, because there was a lot of buzz about these when they were solicited.
Well, and if anyone knows kind of what DC's planning, you know, longer term with the Hanna-Barbera stuff, I'm real curious about that, too. I think it's a great library of properties, some of which make sense to integrate with the DC universe, some of which don't. So I'm curious where they're heading and what the listeners are thinking of what they've read. Because you're right, a lot of people were very excited about different ones for different reasons. And I'm curious if these work better for them than they did for me. I mean, I enjoyed them. They were good. But none of them made me think, wow, this is just a really brilliant crossover, or I can't wait for this series, or something like that.
Yeah.
So that having been said, shall we move on to Marvel?
Yeah.
This is X-Men Prime number 1. This is a another $4.99 comic. Doing real well with that this week.
But you got three writers and four or five artists, so you know that's probably why it costs more.
Sure, we'll go with that. This is the start of the next X-Men season, and I'm doing air quotes for those who can't see it on the audio podcast here, because it's only audio and you can't see anything. They're starting, it's like, okay, we've done what we've done with the X-Men versus the Inhumans. Let's kind of put that behind us. Let's move forward, sort of a thing. This is not really so much the start of that new season, so much as the preamble to it. To me, this is kind of a pivot point issue, much like some of the Rebirth one-shots were, where they have where they were at and they have where they want to be, and they need an issue to just kind of say, we're switching over, and kind of smooth off that rough edge or whatever, if you will. This sets up the two X-Men teams, Blue and Gold, I think it is, Weapon X, Generation X, the Green Jean Grey title. Oddly enough, it doesn't set up either Cable or Iceman's titles, which seemed a little inexplicable, because some of how they were setting up the Weapon X stuff was really tangential to the main story here. And the main story was really all around Kitty Pryde as she's kind of rejoining the X-Men. And I like Kitty Pryde, so having her as the lead character of the issue didn't bother me at all. But it was one of those things where I felt this was a move the chess pieces on the board, give it just enough of a character arc to feel like we might have actually gotten a story in here. It ended on an interesting note, but it's one that, I don't say they overplayed their hand. Basically, and this will be a little bit of a spoiler, but I'm going to go with it anyways. The issue ends with the X-Mansion having relocated out of Limbo, where it had been for a bit, smack dab into Central Park. And I don't think that's going to go over well with everybody, like, you know, the New Yorkers and the Marvel Universe, etc. or whatnot. But give it 2 years, it'll pass. I mean, just like how they had taken over, what was it, Alcatraz, or had another island out or whatever in San Francisco or some other things like that. This is just kicking off the next year or two's worth of X-Men stuff until that winds down and they do another kind of issue like this to re-vector it in another direction. I mean, this was really as much a marketing tool as a comic book issue, and there's nothing wrong with that. It is a jumping on point. I just don't know if it's really going to hook any readers in and of itself that aren't maybe lapsed X-Men readers. And it's not a bad issue. It's just kind of spread thin and predominantly set up.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking this would have been a really good free comic book day selection.
Yeah.
For them. You know, I was reading like All New X-Men, and when it started getting co-opted by event after event, and then I kind of just faded away and just dropped all the X-books for a while, and then Inhumans started happening, and then IVX started happening. So I've been out of the game for a while now, waiting for this all stuff to settle. And so I was hoping this would be give me something to get me back in. And I think there's some stuff in here that's interesting. Sadly, the most interesting titles to me was the Weapon X setup. And that seems the most interesting. I also thought X-Men Blue might seemed interesting to me. So I'm going to try those two. I'll probably stay away from Gold. I'll probably stay away from Generation X and Jean Grey. And TBD on Cable and X-Men. I don't know. But I thought, I mean, there was some fun stuff in here, and it was, you're totally right. It is nothing but set up, and it almost feels like an ad. And
oh, absolutely.
And if it was, you know, too bad it's not cheaper, then I guess it'd probably be more forgiving that it's an ad. But at $5, you know, you do kind of want a little bit more story. But it's pretty much all set up. But I think there's some fun stuff, and I just wish it was like a $3 book instead of a $5 book. Be easier to swallow.
Agreed. The other thing that annoyed me a little with this is I'm going to go with, for lack of a better phrase, dishonest storytelling. You know that Danger Room sequence we've got with the young X-Men?
Yeah, it's just on a loop.
Well, yeah. Before we get to that, we've got a two-page splash setting it up. Oh, it's the young X-Men in the Danger Room. Cool. Okay, fine. Angel saves Jean. It's like, oh, why did you do that? You know, don't be sexist, whatever. It's like, no, it's because you're Jean Grey, or it's Eugene. And she's thinking to herself with a thought balloon, which doesn't happen often. What the hell was that? Followed by Cyclops. What the hell was that? Another thought balloon. Go another page or so, and we've got Jean Grey again thinking, what the hell was that? And then I'm starting to think, what the hell is that? Because this turns out, like you said, to be a pre-recorded session in the Danger Room.
So it should have been totally scripted.
It should have been thought balloonless. Have we ever seen the Danger Room create simulacrums so realistic that they have thoughts that presumably one of the other bazillion telepaths in the X-Men mansion or whatever could be listening in on? Basically, the writing is setting us up as if it is really them. Oh, no, wait, it's a recording. This takes the Is-It-Real or Memorex a little too far, in my opinion.
Yeah, so they really weren't playing fair then.
That's my point.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I don't expect them to, those sorts of cheap writing shenanigans or whatever. It happens from time to time. I expect a little better out of these guys, but, you know, it was so odd just to see the thought balloon to begin with. Of course, they only had the one, so they had to use it multiple times with the same dialogue or whatever. You know, whatever. If you're reading X-Men, you're reading X-Men. If you're not, I don't know that this is going to sell you on it. I am looking forward to this next phase a little bit more than what we've had before, because I've gotten a little tired of the X-Men and the Inhumans going at it, or the X-Men and the Avengers, or, you know, the X-Men and whoever. This whole, hey, let's be heroes. I like that idea. We'll see if it works.
Did they ever decide what to do about that cloud?
Yeah, they dealt with that at the end of the IVX Inhumans versus X-Men series a week or two back.
Was it scintillating and all I thought it would be?
Sure, we'll go with that. It was pulse pounding. Things will never be the same again. It was the all new Terrigen cloud. No, I'm kidding. They did what they had to do to get where they wanted to get to.
It was probably not worth even picking up in trade, is it? No longer matters, does it?
Certainly no longer matters, but if you want to understand why it no longer matters, then maybe, but I think it no longer matters.
Yep.
It was the big climatic moment to this whole Inhumans versus X-Men thing that's been going on for, what, a year or so now, and it just kind of, in my mind, fizzled. They did what they needed to do, but it was pull a rabbit out of the hat kind of writing. So they've had other big things that end on a, wow, that really changes the game and whatnot. This time I didn't really feel it did. It was maybe not the exact mechanism for how I thought they would get to where they would get to, but it was where I thought they would get to. You know, with what the Inhumans and the X-Men both still existing on Earth. Gee, go figure.
Now, I also missed, I thought Nightcrawler died.
He did. He got better.
Okay. When did that happen?
Trying to remember when he died. He came back in John Cassaday's last run. He's been back for a while.
Okay. I think he died in his miniseries.
I forget when he's. It's not the first time he died. That's part of my confusion.
Yeah.
It happens.
So it seems like they're saving Wolverine's resurrection for a later date.
I think they're saving it for the upcoming Generations storyline, potentially. We know he's coming back. We know they're all coming back. That's why I think they overplay their hands at times. Every time they go in this bold new direction, kill people off or whatever, it's like it'll last for the duration of this kind of arc that they've had a big planning session for. Then a new team of creators or somebody with a new idea or whatever will take it in another direction. And yeah, it doesn't matter what really happened here. We'll just pick up where we want to pick up and gloss over, you know, anything that's inconvenient.
Well, is this is part of the resurrection, or is that a different thing altogether?
I think this kicks it off, maybe.
Okay, so resurrection could be the event that ties all these together.
I think that's possibly the banner they're using for launching all the new titles, but I'm jaded enough I haven't paid enough attention to their marketing hype.
Yeah, well, obviously so am I. I kind of just tuned it all out and I'm trying to pick, like, now what are we doing now? What are we doing? So, this is definitely a marketing piece, an ad, a nice long ad for these five books or so. And you know what they're doing. Some of them were interesting. The art I thought was all pretty solid. Not a lot of real detailed backgrounds, but the actual characters in there all looked pretty good. And I think it did a little better job with Weapon X and made it look the most interesting of the lot. I don't know. I guess I'm going to give this thing a C plus or a B minus. I'm right on the fence. I'm going to give it a B minus because I am kind of intrigued by this Weapon X, and I'll probably pick up the X-Men Blue as well. So the ad work got me hooked on too.
I'm going with the C plus. It was okay. I felt they were a little dishonest in the storytelling in places. It was very much a let's just reposition things so we can kick off the title, you know, the upcoming titles where we want to, and not have to hopefully deal too much with ramifications of the past stuff there. It's a turning point issue, plain and simple, and yeah.
You know, it's sad because it was not that long ago, actually probably 4 or 5 years now, when Jason Aaron's run on Wolverine and the X-Men was my favorite Marvel comic. I couldn't wait for a new issue to come out, and I just loved it. And then I was X-less. I had no X-books at all on my reading list for a long time. So I hope these are good.
I hope so too. Some of them show some promise. I just didn't feel any of that promise showed up in this particular X-Men Prime issue. Going with the two teams, Blue and Gold, there's some interesting stuff they set up for both. They both have iconic lineups. Some of the other titles look like fun. It just comes down to, are they really going to try to be heroes, as they're claiming here? And do they have good creators that tell good stories? So we'll find out. I'm hopeful. But this is not an issue I feel I could give to somebody and then just, wow, I've got to be reading all the X-Men books. It's just not that.
No. But it would be a good free comic book day book.
Yeah, if only it was free and not $5. So that having been said, let's go on to our other book. This is Jughead the Hunger one-shot from Archie Horror. And I don't know if I was really paying enough attention to that part of it when I
I was going to say the same thing. I was like, did you really know what this was about? Because I didn't. I thought it was going to be a little more, why is Jughead always so hungry?
I was kind of thinking that too.
I thought it was like going to be cheeseburger focused.
Or he eats the world into, to, you know, destitute because he's eating all the food, or I don't know. Something a little more happy-go-lucky than this.
Yeah.
They say it's a horror title. It's an Archie horror title, so it wasn't that horrific. But there was a little bit of you know, Archie kind of gore or whatever with people getting decapitated, you know, limbs and stuff like that. It's like,
and the tone was really
Yeah.
Really different. It had a little bit of Afterlife with Archie in it. But it also felt like Grimm, the television series.
Mm.
And it had a little bit of that in there. And I'm curious as to what brought this on. Where did this come from? Why did this come out? And I mean, it's a one shot, so is there going to be a world of these? Is this going to be like a line of one shots in the horror genre for them? I don't know.
I think they may have done others like this in the past. I really don't know. I haven't paid that much attention, but it wasn't what I was expecting. It was the art was okay, better in some places than others. It was evocative of the Archie House style, but not slavishly so. It was clearly different than that. It was a more darker noir take on it, almost.
It's much closer to the Francavilla art in Afterlife with Archie.
I didn't read that, so I can't really compare, but that makes sense.
Yeah, but it's confusing because Afterlife with Archie is Jughead as a zombie, whereas this is Jughead as a werewolf.
Yeah, as a werewolf.
So it's close but different, and there's just a lot of interpretations of Archie in the world right now via a lot of different media, and it can be confusing for folks. It's me especially.
I don't find it so much confusing, but it's a definite turnoff. It's like, pick one, pick two, pick four, but 18 or whatever. I mean, it's one where they've gone in so many different directions and stuff. And with this particular story, there were aspects of it of, oh, he's a werewolf, he's doing all this stuff. It was cliche, you know? Maybe it was meant to be, but either way, it didn't tell a story that I felt was adding anything to either the Archie mythos as a kind of a counterpoint to the regular way it is or something, or to the you know, a different spoof kind of a take on werewolves or anything. It was a bizarre, almost not quite Twilight Zone-ish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What if Jughead realizes he's a werewolf, sort of a what if kind of an issue. Again, it's a one shot. It's got resolution-ish, sort of, kind of, but I don't know. I didn't dislike it, but it's certainly not something I see the need to get anything more of. And
yeah, since it's a one shot, you have no problem there.
Yeah, but if they do another kind of Archie horror sort of a thing, again, like they've done the Afterlife with Archie, the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, based on the House ad back here, I really don't feel the need to pick up any of those.
Yeah, both of those are incredibly slow to come out. The Afterlife has had maybe a dozen issues over 3 or 4 years, and Sabrina, I think we're at 2 or 3 in a couple of years. They're really slow, and not sure what the deal is. I think folks that like Grimm, the show, will instantly recognize Betty as the lead Grimm, and Jughead as a Vesson, and it's almost like straight ripoff almost, and the backstory, and generational passing down of the roles and stuff. It's really very note for note if you're familiar with the show.
Well, and if you're I don't think it's original to Grimm.
Yeah, and that's when you said cliche. Yeah, that there's a lot of that on there. The only fresh take is really, well, yeah, it's a cliched story, but you've never seen it with Archie characters before. So, but we have. We've seen it over in Afterlife with Archie. So it's very similar. Not a lot of new ground to be covered. Kind of a by the numbers werewolf story. You get a lot of a book here, like 40 pages. So
it was $4.99 though.
But it wasn't $4.99 in 30 pages.
Fair point.
Like X-Men, whatever. What did we just review? Prime?
X-Men Prime, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it was a horrible thing. I'm not saying I regret reading it or anything, but it's not in kind of in my wheelhouse or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fine reading stuff outside of that, but there wasn't anything in terms of characterization, plot, concepts, dialogue, art, execution, you know, anything, mm-hmm, that made me think, wow, this is at least a new angle on it, a new riff on it, a different spin or anything.
Mm-hmm. For me, it felt like an Elseworlds story that, you know, you like Superman and you're reading all the Superman books, and here comes a nice Elseworld Superman that's totally different, and you can either enjoy that because it's different, or you can't because you like your Superman the way it is. This, if you're a big Archie fan and you can't get enough Archie, well, here's an Elseworld Archie to kind of enjoy that as well. I don't know who that person is that can't. There's so much Archie out there right now. I don't know who that is that needs more. There's plenty.
Yeah, and for me, it's one of the things that's made me realize that you know, I don't need to read all the Archie stuff. I'm starting to cut back already on some of it, and this may help me make it further cuts. I don't know. For me, it's there. It did what it set out to do. It did it acceptably, but I felt it was a little uninspired. There was a little bit of gore, but they didn't go hardcore on that, which I appreciated, and they needed to have some of what they had. I'm going with a flat-out C rating on this. I think there are going to be people who like it, but I don't know if there's going to be anybody who's just wowed by it, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not the right person to judge that, probably.
I mean, beside its flaws, beside its cliched nature, it probably was the best of the three books that I read. It definitely was for me. So I'm going to give it a B+. And I may be a sucker, and if they do a Betty the Hunger one shot that picks up where this story left off, I'll probably check it out, because Grimm's canceled or ended, however you want to interpret it. And so if I want a little more grim action, I might get it here.
Okay, fair enough. Fills a void.
Yeah.
All right, I can see that. If they do another follow-up, I'll pass. But I think they could have done a really fun story of just, you know, why does he eat so much? How does he not grow, you know, enormous mm-hmm. with his appetite and so forth? How can he afford all of this? You know, there are many ways they could have gone. I did like the opening bit in the all-you-could-eat restaurant.
Yeah, that was good. Fun. And then it took a turn.
Yeah.
And the writer is Frank Thierry, who's doing a lot of work over at Aftershock. And so I'm liking some of the stuff that he's doing over there, Alters and a couple of others. So he's heavily involved with that publisher and must have had this story laying around and got a little more cachet now and can get it published.
Yeah. Again, not bad, just not for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I am still a little behind. I've got maybe half of last week left, maybe only about 20 items, somewhere in there. Barely put a dent into this week. I read the different DC Hanna-Barbera ones just so I could compare that with the Booster Gold Flintstones. Read the Titans Annual. That seems to be tying into the meta arc for the DC Rebirth stuff, potentially, maybe not definitively, but I think it will. I'm trying to think if I've read anything else this week or not. Those are the main things.
Yeah, it was weird because the X-Men Prime was the only Marvel book. That sometimes those fifth weeks are really, really strange, and there's really nothing that that captures your imagination, you know?
I had a fairly sizable stack this time around, at least 40 items. So it wasn't for a drought for me this week. How about that? I just haven't had time to get to it.
Yeah, I guess more in the big two area.
Yeah.
It was a little light for me.
Well, again, like you said, the fifth weeks and stuff like that, there's just, I think part of it is they're putting a lot of stuff out, and with Marvel, they're also kind of repositioning between, you know, seasons, if you will, and I use the term very loosely, as they're setting up for the next stuff.
I was excited to see another Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows. I think this was last week. The fifth issue came out because it ended really well with issue 4, and I thought, well, they just did a nice 4-issue miniseries. And then issue 5 came out and kind of started a new arc. And so I guess that's ongoing until it's not. And it's still really good. It's it's actually better than the main Amazing Spider-Man title, if you can believe it.
I don't know if I'd go that far. It's
definitely better than the Peter Parker title.
I don't know. I'm liking what they're doing in Amazing Spider-Man. I think they're doing some good stuff here. I would like to see how it plays in with some of the Spider-Verse stuff they've done. you know, particularly Mayday Parker and some others. This seems like another spin-off continuity that will go for a little bit and then probably get forgotten for quite some time. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. They're telling some good stories. It's fun to see, you know, this sort of a married with children take on Spider-Man. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm liking it a lot. Almost as much as the Miles Morales run.
That one I'm digging, but the crossover with Spider-Gwen's just going too long.
Well, it's over. I really liked it, though.
I haven't read the end of it yet, so, like I said, a little behind on my reading. One thing I do want to mention, just so all the listeners know about it, I mentioned this on the Slack channel. I don't think I put it on the forum. Peter David has started up a GoFundMe campaign. Apparently, when he did Space Cases, a TV show he did, I think about 20 years ago, he made a lot of money. And a lot is kind of how he phrases it. And he knew he was going to have a pretty big tax bill, so he set aside the amount he needed to set aside and stuff for that. But lo and behold, when it came time, almost time to get that, he had swung by an ATM just to get some cash or some other stuff, and noticed about half the money in that account was gone. This is how he found out his then-wife was divorcing him. She used that to pay for a divorce lawyer, according to his GoFundMe campaign, which, horrible thing to go through, plus a horrible way to find out. Plus, it meant he didn't have the money when it came time to pay the IRS. And he's been dealing with that in various ways, various levels of success or whatever, since then. And apparently it's kind of blown up and pay us all of it now or we'll destroy you sort of a thing. I think his phrase is, they want all the money plus penalty and interest or they're going to financially destroy me, is the way he phrases it, which is kind of a scary thought. If the IRS wants to kind of eradicate you, I would imagine they have the wherewithal to do that. So he's, again, started up a GoFundMe campaign. A lot of people have chipped in, some fairly serious amounts. J. Michael Straczynski has chipped in, George Takei has chipped in, George Perez has chipped in, a ton of fans. He's already got on the GoFundMe campaign, $37,304 as of this recording of the $88,000 he needs. I certainly don't expect everybody to drop what you're doing and go hit his campaign and donate now, whatever. If you want to donate, donate. If you don't, don't. But basically, this is a case, as has happened in different ways to different creators, where things are going all right for them. They hit a series of unfortunate events. It certainly doesn't seem like Peter David did anything wrong in this case. But there comes times where, as, you know, an independent contractor like he is as a writer, you got nothing to kind of lean back on if you're in financial straits. And Peter David has been part of the comic book community for decades. Had a long-running article, series of articles, a column or whatever, over in Comic Buyer's Guide. Between his long run on the Hulk, Aquaman, Young Justice, he's done a number of Star Trek novels. He's incredibly prolific and stuff. And I've met him a number of times over the years. He probably has no idea who the hell I am, and that's fine or whatever. But I think I have interacted enough with him to know that if he could have possibly avoided doing this kind of public, you know, hey, I need help, he would have. And to me, that means it's a fairly serious thing for him to do this. And the other thing he does not mention here, but I think it is really worth pointing out, he went through some other rough times beyond just this financial stuff going on with the taxes. He had a stroke. He's made an incredible recovery from that over the years. So there was a period of time where his workload isn't what it could have been or whatever because, again, of health issues. He's not, you know, woe is me or anything of the sort. It's just, you know, things have happened. He needs help. So I wanted to make sure everybody knew about that. If you go to GoFundMe.com, the link is peter-david-needs-your-help. I'll put that in the show notes. Again, if you want to donate, great. If not, that's fine too. Do what works for you. I just want to make sure everybody at least knew about this. Because I think all of us who've been reading comics for any length of time, there's a pretty good likelihood if you've read Marvel and DC or even some other publishers, you've encountered his work. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. This may be a chance for you to kind of pay some of that back to him. So, like I said, I just wanted to point that out so people were aware of it. You know, it sucks when people have things out of their control, really kind of Shanghai their attention, their focus, and their finances.
We got some great feedback on the forum. Dr. Mo has just taken, I think, my question of what to read for the DC Rebirth stuff as it comes up with the button and everything else that's coming up. And, mm-hmm. and he started a new thread that's kind of posting the what's part of the meta arc for DC Rebirth. And I appreciate him taking the effort to do that. He's kind of he's done a ton of stuff that's coming out or is already out, how it fits in the meta arc. He's put spoiler tags on things so you can be spoiled or not spoiled. It's really up to you. Mm-hmm. I found it fascinating and already noticed a few things that I had missed. So I'm going to check some of that stuff out, and I appreciate all his work to do that. That's going to help me as a reader that's not all in and reading everything, still trying to keep up with the main story. I appreciate that. That was really cool.
Yeah, and that thread includes stuff that is central core, you know, DC Universe Rebirth, Special Number One, the button, things like that. And also things that are a little bit more tangential or cursory, you know, mm-hmm. involvement of it.
And the cool thing is, if you don't want to read it, you can just click the spoiler tag and get the gist.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
And last I looked at it, there were a couple of gaps I knew about. I just didn't know the exact issue numbers, and I haven't had time to go dig that up. So if anyone's reading through it and say, oh, but they forgot something, it's a forum thread. Chip in and comment, mm-hmm. you know? That's the whole point of this. Because there's a lot of stuff going on in the DC Universe. They're telling a bigger story and trying to know where all those pieces are to plug it in. And he went as far back as Convergence and some of that stuff that set up, you know, what's going on with Superman and things of that nature, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Alien Al 121 gave us some feedback on 500, our back issue spotlight that celebrated 500 issues, to talk about manga. Mm-hmm. And I believe he lives in Japan. Is
he
that
does.
Correct?
He was on the last teleconference and stuff. Had a good chat with him. Great guy.
So he kind of gives some information on, you know, the sheer number and volume of kind of weekly anthology type Shonen Jump magazines that are there. The manga vending machines, that they do exist. He's seen them. It wasn't just in my imagination, so that was cool, and it kind of clarified some things, and it's a really nice post. We appreciate that, and we've got a lot of great feedback on that episode alone, mm-hmm. and was really nice of everyone to chime in on that.
Yeah, it was a fun one to do. Again, I don't read much manga, and it was a fun experience.
I thought it was cool that there a new listener signed up on the forum. The name is Miskatonic. His very first and only post is in response to The Deep, our review of The Deep, and how it is. He also was kind of jumping on the fact that it's an animated series from an Australian company and on Netflix, and how enjoyable the read was. But I thought, well, that's interesting that was your first post, and we appreciate that. And
oh, absolutely.
We'd like to hear more about you at the Welcome to the forum thread, and I know Jason and everybody else would encourage you to send in a clip for the next preview spotlight, since you missed this one.
Before we get off that, we had talked after we had recorded. You had emailed me letting me know that there was another trade or whatever from Gestalt or whatever, and that it was on video. But Miskatonic letting us know it was on Netflix was a huge help. I've since watched 4 or 5 of the episodes.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And
it's fun. It's pretty much what I had expected. Again, that Saturday morning cartoon kind of vibe to it. The first episode is very similar to the miniseries. It's different in a few places because I think the miniseries was kind of playing the shorter game, whereas when you've got a full season to go with on TV, you can play the longer game. So there are a few things that they just didn't deal with yet in that issue or in that first episode. But
okay.
It's fun. It's the Jeffrey the Fish character gets a fair amount of screen time. He's kind of that fifth member of the family, if you will. It's fun. I definitely recommend it. So I was glad to know it was on Netflix, and so I could check it out that way, because, again, I think we mentioned this last week, week before, that you know, it was $50 worth of stuff to get the trades and the DVDs or whatever, and then another $50 for shipping, and I'm like, I don't think so. So now I can watch it without having to pay all that.
That's very cool. Worth I'll have to check that out after I finish the miniseries and see how it stacks up. That's pretty neat.
It's good, solid animation. It's computer animation from about 2014, which isn't that long ago, but it is animation, computer animation for television, dealing in an aquatic environment and doing waves, doing, you know, water churn and that kind of a stuff. It's not perfect, but it's yeah, artistic license. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. And finally, Michael Castle gave us some info on our digital code conversation where we talked about DC and Marvel swapping their code policies. Well, it looks like Marvel's changed their mind and is going back to their original digital code of the actual issue that you purchased and supplementing that now with another back issue or other title. And one of the pull quotes was, "We've heard the message loud and clear on digital same issue code," said Marvel's senior vice president of sales and marketing, David Gabriel. "We heard how folks across the world were using them, relying on them, loving them. We are always looking to do what's best for fans in the comics industry. So we're pleased to make this program even better now." So cool. That's cool that that's back. And now DC, I wonder if this changes what DC's doing. I don't know if that's going to continue.
I think the DC stuff, which should start with the next shipping week, the first week of April books, that we should start getting the codes in there for DC.
Yeah. And so, but I wonder now if DC will have to match what they're doing since they're giving not only that comic, but another.
No, I don't see DC trying to match that at all. Because, again, it took them a while to even do the digital stuff the way they're doing it now. And I don't think DC's kind of doing a keeping up with the Joneses attitude with Marvel. Nor do I think they should. They should be doing what they think is best for their products and their planning. Not just kind of a tit for tat with whatever's going on at Marvel.
Well, somebody's keeping up with somebody because characters are eerily similar. Storylines, events end up being eerily similar.
I'm not saying they're oblivious to each other. I think they're totally aware of what each one is doing and stuff. But I don't think if one of them raises prices or lowers prices or adds digital codes or removes it, that the other feels obligated to follow suit.
I don't know, man. I think that's the whole reason they added them in the first place. DC was because of Marvel's poor PR choice to remove them.
DC wanted to take some of their books, increase the dollar, not have to pay out for a backup feature, because when they tried that, that didn't work. And they had seen that Marvel's not gotten some significant pushback on the plus a dollar for the digital code thing, so they went down that way. However, that's following up on something Marvel's been doing for years. It just, I think, had odd timing with when it came out. I could be wrong about all of that. Maybe they are trying to one-up each other or something. I would just like to think that if they were, they would be more successful at it, and we'd have a higher, you know, sea level, if you will, rising tide lifts all boats sort of mentality. Nah, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, and if you'd like some more kind of behind-the-curtain look at how the sausage is made in the comics industry, Dr. Mo started a thread on the forum about the Marvel Retailer Summit with some great detailed information from day one and day two of that and some of the things that Marvel was saying. And some of the listeners are up in arms on the forum, and I can't blame them. So I think you should check that out and get a sense for what exactly Marvel's talking about to their retailers out there.
Yeah, I think he linked to the ICV2 articles on it. I've seen the articles. I haven't had time to read them. I've been doing some other stuff, but ICV2 is a great resource for that kind of stuff, and I appreciate that thread getting started on the forum, because I think there's plenty to discuss in these areas. We'll see what happens. Also coming up, we've got the Comic Book Page teleconference that'll happen on Saturday, April 15th at 7 p.m. Central Time. That's when I'm going to be at the computer. You want to chime in and talk, get on Skype, let us know, and I'll add you in. That usually goes for a couple hours. Sometimes we've got a lot of turnout. Last time we only had about two people or whatever, so sometimes it's much more one-on-one type stuff. It's usually a lot of fun, though. And then The next preview spotlight deadline is going to be Saturday, May 6th. That's the morning thereof. Whenever I get up, that's when I start editing the thing. I've already gotten some clips, so I think that's awesome. I haven't even gotten around to sending out that first reminder email. I'll be doing that probably tomorrow morning as we record this. I do have a mailing list. If people want on it, just email me and say, hey, add me to the preview spotlight mailing list. Basically, the day previews comes out that Wednesday, give or take a day, depending how on the ball I am, I send an email out saying, hey, preview spotlight deadline is thus and so, and some information about it, whatnot, pretty much more or less what's in the forum thread. And then the following Wednesday, a week after previews is released and a couple of days before the clips are due, I send another email reminder just saying, hey, don't forget. So if you want in on that, that's great, but it's an opt-in sort of a deal. That those are really the only emails I send out using that list.
And sales numbers come out this week, probably?
Possibly. I don't know. This week or next. It's hard to tell these days. Personally, I'm kind of hoping for next, but that means they'll probably come out this week.
And can we safely assume that it is April? There will be no 2016 numbers sent out by Diamond?
It is April. There has been no 2016 numbers so far for the year-end stuff. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen. I'm not going to say it is going to happen. I'm going to say I have no idea. I would like them to do it at this point just for the completeness of it. I've gotten year-end data for the last decade or so, but, you know, as long as I'm getting the monthly stuff, the year-end is icing on the cake. You know, it's really nice to have. It shows some hidden, kind of below the radar on the monthly basis, big winners, particularly on the trade side and stuff. That's always nice to be able to point those out.
That's true. It does kind of uncover those long tail of some of those titles that sell 300 or 400 bet each and every month, and then they show up.
Yeah,
that's kind of interesting.
It's kind of the equivalent of. You know how, like, in photography, you've got that one main light on the subject, and then you've got the other one kind of from the back to kind of make them pop out from the background?
Yeah,
it's like that second light. Yeah, the key light or whatever. So I'm hoping they do, but with each passing day, I get less and less convinced they will. But they'll do what they're going to do. So, yeah, we'll see what happens on that.
Very cool.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Hey, that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week as we discuss Harley Quinn number 17 from DC, all-new Wolverine number 19 from Marvel, and Colossi number 1 from Vault Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.